Welcome back to We Love Movies. My guest is writer, director, editor and actor Seamus Hanley. His new film, The Middle Finger, has been picked up by Troma Entertainment. And we'll talk a little bit about Troma for those that don't know in just a moment. But it is the home to the likes of James Gunn, the writer-director of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And he also helmed Super and Slither as well. But The Middle Finger has been picked up by Troma Entertainment, which is great news for Seamus. And he joins me now. Seamus, thank you so much for joining me in studio.
Oh,
so tell us a little bit about your film first, The Middle Finger, because it's going to get a very special screening in the Lighthouse on Friday the 18th of August, so people can head along and see it up on the big screen. And a good friend of the show is Alison Spittle, and she's in the film too. So just before we get into it being acquired by Troma and all the making of it, what's going on with the story?
The Middle Finger is it's a superhero comedy slash parody. It's about a teenager called Dennis. He's 18 years old. He was supposed to finish school, and now he's held back and he's repeating classes while all his friends are moving on. So he's just sort of in a personal rut. And amidst all that, to no convenience to him at all, he gets chosen by a strange, seemingly omnipotent being from another world to be a superhero. And instead of that being like a thing that aids him in his life and, you know, helps his catharsis, it's actually a huge inconvenience to him. The being called Belzar turns his head into a hand giving the finger because he thought that was a human sign for respect, and now refuses to change it. And his superpowers aren't clear. He's not really keyed into anything that's going on, which is kind of the teenage experience. And he has given a whole load of responsibility. So it's basically about him sort of stumbling through things and having things not properly explained to him for the sake of comedy. Yeah. Which...
And you know what, Seamus? There are some really, really funny moments in this film.
Oh, thank you.
Before we talk more about it, I want to play everyone just a little bit from the trailer to The Middle Finger.
Something happened to me last night. I think I might be a superhero. What did you do to my head?
This symbol I know to be a gesture of respect.
It's not.
Mass panic has broken out in reaction to the recent news that our world is expected to end tonight.
You are ready.
I feel ready.
What the hell is going on?
Do you think this is me on top of this?
Nope.
Any opportunity in life, you just gotta do.
A little bit there from the trailer to The Middle Finger, written, directed, starring and edited by Seamus Hanley, who joins me now. So Seamus, you know, you're wearing many hats on this movie.
One big one for a lot of films.
Pretty much as well. Exactly. People should check out the front cover if you get a chance out of The Middle Finger. And in terms of like getting this made, because one of the things when we were just in advance of this interview, you were in touch to say the budget was $3,000.
Yeah, yeah. It was very much a grassroots effort. It was very much...
When people see your film, they'll go, what, $3,000? How in the name of God did you make that for $3,000?
Two things. One, just the rapidly evolving film technology. That's one. The other is just and more importantly, the very capable crew. Just a lot of very talented and skilled people working on it, and particularly things like the cinematography. Conor O'Toole, stand-up comedian Conor O'Toole, who acts in the film, also was the cinematographer, and he really went out of his way to surpass the budget with the aesthetic.
Talk to me just as well, for any of the techies that are listening in, just in terms of what you shot it on, edited, just because even the effects as well, like, and how to put those together, because when people see like Belzar, you know, this this being from another planet, the way you're zapped up into space, like,
yeah.
You know, for 3,000, you know, you guys were very, you used a lot of ingenuity here. So
sure, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the behind the scenes in terms of the production.
Well, we shot it on a Canon 5D DSLR, which is very much now the common, like you get great quality out of it, but they're domestically priced. They're not too expensive as film cameras go. Edited by myself on Adobe Premiere Pro, which to me is the best editing software there is. I could go on about it, I won't. But then just things like Adobe After Effects, Dermot O'Brien, comedy writer Dermot O'Brien, but also film techie extraordinaire, did the special effects. So it was, I think it's while there was a lot of just personal skill there, I think a lot of the techies will know as well that this is the point we're at now. You just need some software and just a decent camera, and then the ingenuity, which is the hard part to get.
Yes.
That's the and also from my perspective, a lot of luck to have these people.
And great friends there as well, and everyone getting on board. It reminds me of, you know, Peter Jackson's Bad Taste. Like, it was a lot of pals that had to come together. And look, that was a real labour of love. I think that took 4 years to make. How long did The Middle Finger take for you?
It took us 2 months to shoot it.
You are joking.
I don't know how this happened. I've made one feature film before. It's very much like a home movie. That took a whole year to do. And I've made like a short film before, and that took like a whole year. This one just, there was a lot of luck. It just over, it was late 2015, just kind of 2.5 weeks scattered out over 2 months. We just, it just all just came together, which was tough because it had a lot of locations for such a low budget film. It's a lot of just different people's houses. Things like all the school scenes were shot in one day.
Yeah, because I was even I'm watching it going, knowing how much you've spent on it, thinking, right, Seamus must have known. Was that Seamus's old school that you got in at the weekend or an evening or something like that?
I wish I could say it was. It's just St. Marian's College, I think is the name of the school. I've forgotten now. But things like Boy Eats Girl, and I think they're just were shot there. Like, I think it's just open to production. And then another movie by Constant Motion Pictures, Demon Hunter, which is now was also shot there. So like, I think they're just the ones that are like, just they're just really sound.
Like, you need a school to shoot in. We're the place to go to.
And it's a good, great looking place. Like it looks very, it's a very nice school, but you can pick other places where it looks a little bit more, what's the word, common, or like, you know, and they just let us run with it. I think I'll be coming back there.
Well, look, to be honest with you, the fact that now the film is being acquired, it's up there for people now to rent and buy with Trauma Entertainment. Getting it to them, Seamus, like, when you, because from watching the film, I went, I can see homages to Trauma movies, like, you know, Toxic Avenger, like there's like little kind of hints there from, and just in terms of characters interplay, I felt there was a bit of a Trauma feel there. Was this always designed to be a Trauma movie, or did you feel like once it was finished, you know what, maybe we could take a punt there and get it to them?
It was the latter. And what's really strange is I was a casual Trauma fan. I've now become a big Trauma fan, not just from appreciation, but there was an incentive to watch a lot more of their films afterwards. But the key one was the movie was Sergeant Kabuki Man NYPD, which I love that film. And that's the one where it's a superhero who can't control when he turns into the costume and stuff. And it doesn't choose to be this way. It's just sort of thrown at him and he doesn't even know what's going on. So, but we were in the process of just emailing lots of distributors, and we ended up just, through chance, having a personal contact who was working in Trauma at the time, who put a word in. We got picked up. And then the next thing I know, I was catching up with Trauma. I was watching Toxic Avenger movies, rewatching some, watching others for the first time. And then I was just like, Jesus, this is actually, without realizing, I'd actually picked up a lot more influence than I thought. I knew things from Sergeant Kabuki Man, but then the whole Traumaville vibe, I didn't realize just how subconsciously it absorbed it. And I think part of that was I grew up watching Toxic Crusaders, the
cartoon.
Because I knew I was drawing from Earthworm Jim and The Tick, which I loved as a kid, but Toxic Crusaders was around that same time and had the same kind of voice. So I without even realizing it,
what's it like then seeing your film alongside some of the great Trauma movies like Class of Nukem High and stuff like that?
The one I got really excited was mentioned in an announcement the same time as Cannibal the Musical, which is
Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Which is one I loved when I was a teenager. I went to see a live production of it in Kilkenny when I was 18, and that was the one that made me go, oh, like to have a movie next to their film, because those guys are geniuses. Like it was very exciting. Like it's really something.
Now I'm going to get you to crack out your crystal ball here now in a sec, but like, what does the future hold? Like, obviously Middle Finger, it's up there with Trauma, people can rent and buy it. Could there be potentially to make more Trauma movies, or are you looking maybe a further afield?
I'm open to whatever's possible. I'm writing some stuff now, just working on scripts. Can't, you know, say too much, but not that they're commissioned or anything, but just, you know,
just in case the idea got in.
You don't want to make any promises, you know. Yeah. But some are really Trauma esque. I'd love to make more Trauma stuff because there's a lot of freedom there. One of those ideas might be a sequel to The Middle Finger. That's one that's going around for anyone who'd be interested in that. But at the same time, the hope is that like there'll be opportunities here in Ireland because there's a lot of stuff growing around here. So, you know what I mean? If I for the rest of my life, I'm always making movies for a very small amount of money and they're crazy and they go to the Trauma audience, that's a good life. But I'm open to all kinds of opportunities. I'd love to any kind of stuff.
Well, people should get a chance to check it out. Bearing in mind, if people have just joined us, and like for 3,000, what Seamus has achieved with The Middle Finger, and people can see the film as well up on the big screen, because you do have a very special screening of it in the Lighthouse.
Yeah, August 18th, so that's on next Friday. Alison's going to host a Q&A. So those of you who are fans of Alison Spittle, she's, you know, that's just going to be hilarious. That's already guaranteed. And I just saw a test screening of it. It looks great on the big screen. It really brings out a lot. It's good to watch at home, but I think you'll be missing out if you don't check it out in the cinema.
Just before we go, Seamus, will you be watching it with the crowd? Like, will there be a part of you that will be able to sit there and watch it with everybody, or you'd be like, I have to leave the room. I don't know if I can do it.
You know something? I'm not sure, because I've watched it so many times now. I did watch the test screening, and that was surprisingly easy. Mm. But I might dip in, dip out. You know what I mean? Yeah, who knows? I'm 50-50 at the moment.
If anybody wants more information on the film, how can they get it?
If they go to facebook.com/middlefingermovie or follow me on Twitter at Seamus Hanley. I'm always posting information. Everything's always on the Facebook page, and you can find everything there.
Well, Seamus, congratulations on the film. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
For the budget that it was, to get it picked up by Troma, now playing at the Lighthouse Cinema, full credit to you. Seamus Hanley, writer, director, star and editor of The Middle Finger.
We Love Movies with Gordon Hayden.
Now on We Love Movies, Rory Cashin is still here. Brian Lloyd is on the phone. We are now going to turn our attention to Annabelle Creation, the prequel of the prequel to the spin-off of The Conjuring.
Yep.
That really is some sort of puzzle going on. Because The Conjuring came out, Rory, 2013, was it?
Yes.
In and around that. Hugely successful, as we all know. Spawned its own sequel and then had its own spin-off, Annabelle.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the prequel to Annabelle. So we finally find out how the doll came to be, hence the title Annabelle Creation.
Yes.
Now, Rory, I'm going to set it up there for the plot now, what's happening.
Okay, so there is a very nice doll maker played by
Anthony Padiglia,
and his wife Miranda Otto, and they have a cute little daughter, and there's a horrific accident and the daughter dies, and then it jumps forward about 12 years.
That's it, yeah.
And there is a lovely nun bringing a lot of
very nice looking nun.
She's visually appealing,
you know, as nuns go on film.
Yeah, and there was a little... Actually, nobody get back to that. So she is bringing a busload of unadopted girls to this now large middle-of-nowhere house that they're setting up for as a new orphanage. And when they get there, one of the girls who was suffering from polio but is on the road to recovery begins to see things in the house that no one else can see.
All right. Here is a clip from Annabelle Creation.
You need sleep. That's going to help you with the healing.
I can't stay here, Sister Charlotte. We can't stay here. We need to leave.
Leave? And go where? There isn't anywhere else for us to go.
I didn't fall down those stairs. Something threw me.
What do you mean?
You always say that even though we can't see God, we can feel his presence. Well, in this house, I feel a different kind of presence.
What kind?
An evil one.
A clip there from Annabelle Creation, which is out in cinemas this weekend, part of the expanded Conjuring universe now that Warner Brothers have going on. Brian, just want to bring you in on this, because it's directed by David S. Sandberg, who had his first film debut, Lights Out, was very well received, and it was based on his little short film. So when you first saw Lights Out, like, what did you make of the man's talent?
Yeah, Lights Out was interesting because, you know, it was a very... not necessarily a familiar story, but, you know, it was kind of a standard horror film, but he managed to do it in a very unique visual way. And that's what horror, you know, that sort of way. Like, horror is so commonplace and there's so many of them. So if you can do something original with it, which is what he did in Lights Out, that really stands to you. And plus as well, the fact that David Sandberg is now doing, he's doing Shazam for the DC Cinematic Universe. You know, it seems to be the thing that, you know, they'll do a horror sequel like Annabelle Creation or horror prequel or whatever, and then they'll be given, you know, a bigger film to work with. Same way James Wan, like, he did The Conjuring, And then he did Insidious, and now he's doing Aquaman, and he'll probably do more films after that as well, you know?
Well, I think it's for David S. Sandberg, if he wants to start making bigger films, and I can understand completely why he'd want to get on board, Rory, for Annabelle Creation, because it's part of a series that has been very successful, and that the first Annabelle did get trashed by an awful lot of people. It was terrible. It was directed by, I think, the cinematographer of The Conjuring, so not a proven filmmaker. I could be wrong on that, but I think that's who helmed it. So I've seen the film as well. I thought the script was very workmanlike. It was one of those type of tales that we've all sort of seen before if you've watched an awful lot of horror movies. But Sandberg's direction and the cinematography and the sound design, I think, really elevate pretty much tried and tested material.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it does nothing brand new here, but it is done in the most solid way I've seen done in quite a while. Like, there's a lot of small creepy shocks. It's not constantly like bleh. It's not constantly trying to like jump you out of your chair. There's somewhere it just, they happen so quietly. There's one in particular that I'm thinking of where like the girl is looking into the room and she sees the doll on the chair, and I didn't even cop it straight away, but in like right behind the chair, you could see these two eyes is opening in the dark, and it's there for a split second. And if you don't see it, you don't see it, and you might not get a fright by it, but if you do see it, you're like, oh, that was quite unnerving.
But you know what they do as well, Roy? They spend a bit of time before, like as you mentioned, like they get into those scares. But the characters, for the most part, I came on board with. The nun I didn't buy in at all. I just thought, she was a bit of a cost-effective Eva Mendes. She was just there just to be very syrupy sweet.
She was like
sweet.
A cost-effective Rosario Dawson for me.
Oh, yeah, there's a touch, yeah. And then the Irish priest, who couldn't have looked more un-Irish if you tried.
It was
awful, awful.
And I was like, when he arrived, I was like, well, he's dead.
Gone.
The second he arrived, it was like, Irish priest, he's going to come in with his cross, he's going to do the exorcism, and then he'd be dead.
Thankfully, we didn't get anything like as hackneyed as that. But I did buy into the girls.
Yeah.
I did. I kind of got on board with them. I just felt, Rory, everything felt so familiar. Like, as a horror fan like me, it didn't offer anything other than, you know, it's just a very serviceable, solid enough made movie.
Yeah.
But it didn't come away going, I'd want to watch that again. I think this is more of like a slumber party type horror.
To me, it was like a best of compilation of like every kind of horror. There's like the haunted house horror. There's the haunted child horror, which is its own thing. There's the haunted item horror, which, you know, Annabelle and The Conjuring have been doing so well lately. It just, everything it did, I have seen done before, but in this film, I felt they did it really well.
Yeah.
And for the last third of the film, it is, in my opinion, relentless. It is just constant scare after scare after scare. And it got to the point where I was like, I'm exhausted now by this film because it's making me so tense. I was just like, can it just be over so I can leave and I can talk about how I was found it fun. It was like a ghost train.
Whereas
it's just really fun.
Whereas, you see, that's it. You got in with the fun part of it. There was a part of me that, as they were ratcheting up the scares at the end, I was a bit like, I was becoming numb to it.
Oh.
It was almost like, here we go. You're becoming a little bit overblown.
Mm.
The way it is. Oh, look, there's that scarecrow over there. I wonder, is he going to turn into something? You know what I mean?
And I enjoyed that they set up. Like, it was a lot of, what is that called? Chekhov's gun, where it's like you see the stuff at the start and you're like, well, that's coming back later.
Chekhov's gun, yeah.
There's one where the girl is getting into a chairlift on the stairs. And because she has the polio stuff and she can't walk up the stairs. And the second she sat in, I was like, oh, I wonder if that will come into play later on. This really slow-moving stair lift.
Yeah.
But then later on, when that scene comes up, I was like, they did it really well.
Yeah. Okay, so, look, there's a lot of positives to be taken. Like, it's by no means a badly made film. Absolutely not. If anything, Sandberg does so much more than the material he's given.
Like, yeah.
I think he just goes to show you that he's very much a director on the rise. And as Brian pointed out, you can understand why Warner Brothers very much want to keep him in the fold because he's now been given Shazam. He's a director with a very promising future. Whereas a screenwriter, I doubt it.
Yeah, and it says as well the fact that he can elevate something that is a fairly bog standard script, and as you say, make it into something serviceable, make it into something that can be done well. That, you know, I mean, most of the scripts that you see for, you know, the DC cinematic universes, they're normally crap, you know, that kind of way. But if they can be turned into something workable, it can
it can work for them, you know.
Out of 10, I would give it 6, and because of my flaws are that I've just felt like, oh, I've seen it all before. So unfortunately, the scares did nothing much for me. But Rory, you would obviously you came away from it with a total different opinion.
Yeah, I'd probably give it like 7.5. I thought it was a really, really solid genre. Kind of like it's Hollywood horror, but like done really well. There's nothing odd or weird about it. The way, you know, Split or Get Out or It Comes at Night, like the big great horrors of the year so far. There's nothing original about it, but it's really, really well done.
Excellent stuff. Rory Cashin, thank you so much for that. And Brian Lloyd, the guys will be back next week. One of the big films out is The Dark Tower.
Yes.
Which has been getting very middling reviews.
No. Not middling.
Terrible.
Not middling.
Okay, all right. Let's call it like you see it. So it's been terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Like shocking. Like like everyone, almost every review I've read had said, we want you to go see it so you can see how bad it is.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And what's the other one? Hitman's Bodyguard.
Which, to be honest, when I first heard the premise to this, Brian, I was like, this sounds awful. You know, you've got Ryan Reynolds, if I say Kevin Reynolds, Ryan Reynolds, who is the bodyguard to Samuel L. Jackson's hitman of the title. And I thought, oh, this is going to be awful. And the trailer actually looks pretty good, almost in a weird Lethal Weapon sort of vibe.
Yeah.
And it's directed by Patrick Hughes, who did The Expendables 3. So, like, it's kind of like, really? You think you can do this? But from what I've heard, it's meant to be very, very good. It's meant to be very, very funny.
I you know what? For Patrick Hughes, I hope this is a bit of a return to form, because his first film, I think, was it Red Hill?
Yeah.
Was quite well received.
Yeah, Western thing, yeah.
Yeah, and then...
Expendables 3 wasn't good. I will say Hitman's Bodyguard is better than Expendables 3.
Excellent.
So that's not hard, though.
Well,
there you go, Rory. Let's put you in your place.
Well, no.
Great stuff, gentlemen. We'll chat to you next week.